Thankful this evening to look out and see all those who've come to worship our God. We have visitors with us, and you are honored guests, and your presence is appreciated as the more we have to sincerely honor our God and our Savior, the more wonderful that is. So thank you for being here, and we invite you to stay around a little while after service tonight. Let us get to know you and encourage one another in our common faith. As has been mentioned, the last couple of weeks especially, and appreciate all the prayers that have been offered. I'm planning to head out tomorrow for Africa to spend some time there evangelizing, holding up the hands of men there who are evangelizing, and helping them in the work that they're, great work that they're doing in Africa. Within the last year and a half, the church at College View in Florence and the church at Anderson have become quite interested in the work in Southern Africa. Both those congregations asked me to come and tell them about the work, and partly as a consequence of that, they have committed to supporting men in Zimbabwe. Because of that, they also have an interest, like you do, in having boots on the ground there and getting to know more about what's going on. And so they are sending their evangelists, Kenny Moore and Lowell Salee, with me on this particular trip. So I'd like to start tonight by sharing with you a little bit about the plan, and then we'll get into the lesson for this evening, which also has to do with a good bit about what's going on in Africa. But Lord willing, we'll fly out of Huntsville tomorrow. Tad Corder, Lowell Salee, and I will meet up with Joe Greer in Atlanta, and we'll fly over to Johannesburg, South Africa. We'll leave, as I said, tomorrow morning. We'll get to Johannesburg about supper time on Tuesday night, spend the night in Johannesburg, and the four of us will fly from there to Zimbabwe. Joe and Tad are going to Bulawayo and conduct some work there for about a week, and I'm going to take Lowell with me, and we'll be going to Harare, the capital city of Zimbabwe. Lowell and I are planning, Lord willing, to spend about 2 days with about 30 preachers from that area. Eight of those preachers are men that we support. Two of the others are men that Anderson and Florence College View supports. So we'll have about 10 guys there that are supported from North Alabama and about 20 other guys that I've known and met in times past. So this will be a very mature group of local preachers, but we're going to be talking about mature things. And these are some of the leaders, the great leaders in some of the work that's being done over there. So Lowell and I will be having classes there. Then we're going to go out with Reason Marara, who's our host. We support Reason. We're going to go out with him for a couple of days to congregations that he works with. Then that Saturday, Kenny Moore will join us, Lord willing. He has to fly in a little bit later, but he'll join us. And all of us will go down to Mutare and spend about 3 days going out in the bush areas to places that are just small villages, but where a lot of evangelism has gone on, and there are many, many new Christians in these areas. You see weekly pictures of baptisms going on in these areas, and excited about that. I'll be working with Russell Niarambi, who we support. Russell is in this area. You may remember some of Russell's misadventures over the last couple of years. A year ago in January, he was crossing a river to go evangelize and got bit by an alligator. Then he was in a car wreck and almost was killed by that. So he's had some hard times, but he continues to do the work of an evangelist. And in this area, you may remember earlier in the year that there was a big hurricane, wiped out homes, flooded houses. Russell has been taking some relief into that area. It's called Chimanimani. And Lord willing, one of the days he and I and Reason will be able to go out and view that and see how the saints are doing there. So that's some of the work that's planned for Zimbabwe. That's in 1 week's time. At the end of that week, the four of us who are there will fly back to Johannesburg because you can't get a good flight from Zimbabwe to Zambia, where we're going next. Lowell and Kenny will fly home, but Joe and Tad and I will fly to Lilongwe, Malawi, where we'll travel from there to Chapada, Zambia. and we're planning to work there in Chapada for about a week. You may remember our work in Zambia last year. We had a great opportunity to share with some gospel preachers who are interested in learning the truth about the work and organization of the church. They had been influenced by some wrong ideas along that line, so we had dealt with about 35 of them last year in Zambia, but it was on the far other side of the country. If you're looking at the map, we were last year right here in Livingston, Zambia. This year we're going to be in Chapada, which is several hundred miles away. So we're doing the same kind of work, but we're doing it on the other side of Zambia. We're looking forward to that, as well as getting out in some of the villages there. So that's just a quick overview. And Lord willing, when I get back, we'll give a more detailed report of how things go. We certainly want your prayers that the work of the Lord can be done well, that we'll have wisdom and safety and energy to do the things that the Lord has set before us, and that we'll find the brethren there very cooperative with us, and I expect that will be the case. Our classes in Harare, as I mentioned, with 30, I think, pretty mature preachers, most of whom I know, I think all of whom I will know. One of the lessons I want to present there to them is this lesson. And I don't know how much the congregation here needs this lesson, but preachers need this lesson. And churches need to understand what their relationship is with the preachers that they support, especially those in the field, and what the expectations that they should have for those men that they support in the field, and our hopes for their work. It's a great joy for a church to support a preacher in spreading the gospel. I mean, a great joy. I truly believe that this congregation at Eastside is just enthralled with the work of evangelism, both here and abroad. I believe we have many members in this church that are just excited to hear whether it's what's going on in Zimbabwe, what's going on in Guatemala, what's going on in Colombia, in Venezuela, in Brazil, in Southern Africa, where, you know, wherever it may be. Several men in the United States that we support. I think my last count, I believe we support 27 men to preach the gospel, help support at least 27 men in different areas of the world. And I know that many of you are just thrilled to have a part in that. You love to get their reports. You're interested in what's going on. And that's the way it should be. It brings so much joy to a congregation to be able to be involved in that. And we're thankful, just so thankful that the Lord has enabled that for us here at Eastside. I want you to, as we think about the rights and responsibilities of preachers supported to preach the gospel and of those who support them, I want you to think with me about the deep mutual love and fellowship that we have for these men that we support, with these men that we support. Consider Paul's relationship with the Philippians, which I think is exemplary along this line. The Apostle Paul had planted, if you will, the gospel in Philippi in about the year 50 AD. You'll remember the Macedonian call. He sees this vision. We talked about it a little bit this morning of a Macedonian man, come over to Macedonia and help us. And I often have noted that he gets to Macedonia, he goes to Philippi, and he finds out that the Macedonian man is a Macedonian woman, because the first person he meets is Lydia, and that's who he shares the gospel with. And so he shares the gospel with her. Her household believes and obeys the gospel. He's arrested. He shares the gospel with the Philippian jailer, the Philippian jailer's household. And so here are some of the first members of the church in Philippi. And eventually, of course, Paul leaves Philippi and heads through the rest of Macedonia, goes to Thessalonica and on his journey. I want you to listen to his words as he writes back to them. And this almost certainly is 11 years later. I believe that Paul wrote the book of Philippians in about 61 AD. In prison, either in Rome or in Caesarea, certainly in prison. But here's what he says, Philippians 1 and verse 3. I thank my God upon every remembrance of you, always in every prayer of mine, making request for you all with joy. With joy. for your fellowship in the gospel from the first day until now. Paul had had a continuing love and abiding fellowship with these Christians for 11 straight years. From the first day until now. And it was a relationship filled with joy and love and a common concern for the spread of the gospel of Jesus Christ. This is the wonderful thing that we can have as a result of what Christ has done for us in sharing with us and giving us the saving gospel so that we might share it with others. Later, Paul will write to the Philippians in the 4th chapter in verse 15, "You Philippians know also that in the beginning of the gospel, when I departed from Macedonia," when he says the beginning of the gospel, he means the beginning of the gospel that he preached there in Philippi. When I departed from Macedonia, "no church shared with me concerning giving and receiving, but you only, you are giving to my needs. For even in Thessalonica, you sent aid once and again for my necessities." And if you follow that trip, he left Philippi. He winds up in Thessalonica not too very long after that, just a very short period of time. But he doesn't get very far away, and they're already sending him help. And apparently that continues for a long period of time, such a long period of time that, in fact, as Paul is writing this letter 11 years later, they have sent to him Epaphroditus with support money. And if Paul's in Roman prison, as Ben mentioned in a lesson about Epaphroditus the other day, it's probably a journey of some 1,000 miles. Philippians 2, verse 25. "I consider it necessary to send to you Epaphroditus, my brother, fellow worker, and fellow soldier, but your messenger and the one who ministered to my need." Epaphroditus was a messenger. The word there is apostle. He was apostled by the church at Philippi, sent out to bring aid and help to Paul. And in verse 29, Paul says, after saying, "I'm going to send him back to you." You've heard that he was sick. He was, and he got better and all of that. But then in verse 29, he says, "Receive him therefore in the Lord with all gladness, and hold such men in esteem, because for the work of Christ he came close to death, not regarding his life, to supply what was lacking in your service toward me." Now, he's already said, "You've helped me from the first day until now, and still you're sending, you felt like you hadn't helped me enough, and so here 11 years later, you're still sending Epaphroditus with support for me." That describes the ideal relationship between a church and an evangelist it's supporting in the field. It's beautiful. It is a beautiful thing. Now, one of the things we have to notice about this, and one of the things I'm going to share with the brethren in Zimbabwe, is the reason that the Philippians had such love and confidence in Paul. He was the one who had shared with them the gospel initially. They, in a real way, owed their soul salvation to Paul. That's a lot different situation than when you're supporting somebody who's a stranger to you. And so, we'll talk about this more in a minute, but it really becomes important for those that we don't really know that well, that we don't owe our own soul salvation to, that we've just said, "Well, here's a man who's evangelizing and we'd like to help him. We feel like he's a faithful brother." It's important that we develop a relationship, that we gain trust with one another. And we'll be talking about that some more. But let's start then with some very basic principles. Men who give their lives to preaching the gospel have a right to be supported. Let's go in our Bibles to 1 Corinthians chapter 9. And pick up the reading. First of all, in verse 4, it says verse 9 on the screen, but let's pick up in verse 4. "Do we have no right to eat and drink?" Paul asked. "Do we have no right to take along a believing wife, as do the other apostles, the brothers of the Lord, and Cephas? Or is it only Barnabas and I who have no right to refrain from working? Whoever goes to war at his own expense, who plants a vineyard and does not eat of its fruit, who tends a flock and does not drink of the milk of the flock? Do I say these things as a mere man, or does not the law say the same also? For it is written in the law of Moses, 'You shall not muzzle an ox while it treads out the grain.' Is it oxen God is concerned about, or does he say it altogether for our sakes? For our sakes, no doubt, this is written, that he who plows should plow in hope, and he who threshes in hope should be partaker of his hope. If we have sown spiritual things for you, is it a great thing if we reap your material things? If others are partakers of this right over you, are not we even more? Nevertheless, we have not used this right, but endure all things lest we hinder the gospel of Christ. Do you not know that those who minister the holy things eat of the things of the temple, and those who serve at the altar partake of the offerings of the altar? Even so, the Lord has commanded that those who preach the gospel should live from the gospel. That's the word of God on the matter. Men who give their lives to preaching the gospel faithfully have a right to be supported. Here's some things we learn. That means that they have a right to refrain from secular work. Paul mentions that in verse 6. He asks a rhetorical question. Is it only Barnabas and I that have to work and all these others are refraining from secular work? No, we all who are giving ourselves to preaching of the gospel have a right to refrain from secular work. This right is based upon long-established truths. Those who work at a task may enjoy its fruits. That's only fair and right. The ox that treads out the grain, he may eat of that grain. These principles you find in the old law. The principle of sowing and reaping applies. If you sow, spiritual things, surely you have a right to reap material things at least. And so Paul uses that argument as well, the sowing and reaping argument. Those who minister the holy things of the temple, the priest and some of the Levites got to eat of the sacrifices that were brought. The very reason for giving the tithes in the Old Testament was to support the priests and the Levites. That's what that money and stuff was used for, to support those who had ministering in the service of the temple. And Paul uses that as a parallel to supporting preachers today. It's one of the reasons we give what we give, to support gospel preachers. That's the parallel that he makes. And so he gives all of these reasons, and obviously you can follow those. It's pretty plain. What he's saying, he lays out a very straightforward argument. But then he says that one may choose not to exercise this right. In other words, you could be a gospel preacher and you could say, well, I'm not going to be supported full-time or part-time or whatever. I'm not going to be supported. And maybe your reason for that, or a good reason for that, would be you feel like, well, if you're supported by a certain group or certain folks, that they may feel like that may be a stumbling block to them. They may feel like you're doing it for the money. They may feel like they own you as a preacher, and so they have the right to tell you, you know, what to preach and what to do. And so there might be really good and legitimate reasons for a gospel preacher to say, okay, I have a right to be supported, but I'm not going to be supported. I'm not going to take funds from this group or that group or maybe any group. And so if that's the case, then a preacher must obviously be willing to work with his hands. Notice what Paul says in verse 15 of this text. He says, I've used none of these things, nor have I written these things that it should be done so to me, for it would be better for me to die than anyone should make my boasting void. Now Paul has already said that the church in Philippi was sending to his needs on a regular basis. And the indication is while he was in Corinth, they were doing that. But he was also working with his hands. He was taking care of his own needs. The point is, the Corinthians weren't having to do that. In all the time that Paul spent in Corinth, apparently he never asked anything from anybody in that church. And the reason was so as not to be a stumbling block to them. He says this. He says, if I preach the gospel, I have nothing to boast of, for necessity is laid upon me. Yes, woe is me if I do not preach the gospel. In other words, I have to preach the gospel. I have a responsibility to do that. If I do this willingly, I have a reward. If it is against my will, I've been entrusted with a stewardship. What is my reward then? That when I preach the gospel, I may present the gospel of Christ without charge, that I may not abuse my authority in the gospel. He has authority. He could insist on being supported, but he doesn't want to abuse that. He doesn't want to appear to abuse it. And so he says in verse 19, for though I am free from all men, I have made myself a servant to all that I might win the more. See, Paul's motivation was preaching the gospel. It wasn't making money. He had a right to be supported, but that wasn't his motivation. His motivation was to preach the gospel and save souls. And he's going to do whatever he needs doing, including saying, I don't want a salary. I don't want to be supported. I don't want those wages. if it's going to hinder the gospel. I become all things to all men that I might by all means save some. That's the attitude every preacher needs to have. Every last preacher. And I'm going to tell you here, any preachers who may be here tonight, and we may have two or three, I'm not sure. And every preacher that I talk to in Zimbabwe, that truth. And if you're preaching for money, you need to quit. Now. If you're preaching to save souls, we have to understand that. And as far as Paul was concerned, the money was irrelevant. He was going to preach whether he got support or not. He was going to preach whether Corinth supported him, whether Philippi did, whatever. He's going to preach the gospel. And he worked to do so. And he mentions that in Acts 18 and Acts 20 and 2 Thessalonians, even among the Thessalonians, where he said, you remember, he said Philippi was sending to him in Thessalonica. Listen to what he says about that. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 and verse 7. He says, you yourselves know how you ought to follow us, for we were not disorderly among you, nor did we eat anyone's bread free of charge, but worked with labor and toil night and day, that we might not be a burden to any of you. He didn't take anything from the Thessalonians. Philippi, just up the road, was sending to him support, but he wouldn't take anything from the Thessalonians. Notice what he goes on to say. Not because we do not have authority, but to make ourselves an example of how you ought to follow us. It was more important for Paul to set an example to the Thessalonians of how you ought to work and earn your own keep than it was for him to receive wages from them, which he deserved. He says, even when we were with you, we commanded this, if anyone will not work, neither shall he eat. So here's what he's teaching them. And he says, basically, I have to back this up by my example. Y'all should have been supporting me maybe, but I didn't take anything from anybody so that you could learn this lesson. I'm trying to teach you a lesson. All he cared about was their souls. Men who are supported to preach the gospel must do so with the purest of motives. I'd like you to go in your Bibles now to 3 John, perhaps. And notice verses 5 through 8. John is commending the brethren that he's writing to here, and I don't know where they were or who they were, but they had supported some gospel preachers who were just traveling through. And he said about that, he said, beloved, you do faithfully whatever you do for the brethren and for strangers who have borne witness of your love before the church. If you send them forward on their journey in a manner worthy of God, you will do well. So here's some guys who've come through and maybe some others who are coming through and they've stood before the church and they said that congregation really helped us. Those brethren really helped us on our journey. He said, because they went forth for his name's sake, taking nothing from the Gentiles. We therefore ought to receive such, and that is to show them hospitality, to receive such, that we may become fellow workers for the truth. These men mentioned in 3 John were not out to get every dollar or every denarius that they could get. That wasn't their motive in preaching. They went forth for the gospel's sake. They wouldn't take anything from the Gentiles. The Gentiles might have offered them something. We don't want anything from you, because that might hinder the spread of the gospel. Those who merely preach for money will say anything to do so. Peter warns about false teachers in 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 3, who by covetousness will exploit you with deceptive words. They're only after your money. They'll say anything. Paul mentions those in Titus chapter 1 and verse 11, whose mouths must be stopped, who subvert whole households, teaching things which they ought not for dishonest gain. Again, bad motivation makes bad preaching, makes false doctrine. Now, getting back to those people in 3 John, the guys that were supported, the ones that were received by those brethren that John is commending, he says, as he starts that, he says, you do faithfully whatever you do for brethren and for strangers. These were people, now, as I said about Paul, he was really well known by the Philippians. In fact, they owed sort of their soul salvation to the gospel that he preached to them. But these guys that we're looking at, these preachers that we're looking at in 3 John, they came through someplace. They were strangers. They weren't known to these brethren. They were still worthy of support. And that was shown because, number one, they weren't trying to get money from everybody else. Number two, because they went forth for the gospel's sake. That was their motivation. It could be clearly seen that they were preaching for the gospel's sake. Those who are supported to preach must have the purest of motives. They have a responsibility then to be content in any state. Look with me at 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 3. 1 Timothy 6 and verse 3, I'm going to pick up in this context and read a few verses that sort of warm up to the topic. But again, Paul's writing to his young friend Timothy, preacher in the gospel. He says, "If anyone teaches otherwise and does not consent to wholesome words, even the words of our Lord Jesus Christ, and of the doctrine which accords with godliness, he is proud, knowing nothing, but is obsessed with disputes and arguments over words, from which come envy, strife, reviling, evil suspicions, useless wranglings of men of corrupt minds and destitute of the truth, who suppose that godliness is a means of gain." So here are people who, you know, they've got bad attitudes, they're argumentative, they're problem causers, and their idea is, well, we're going to be godly and we're going to preach and teach so we can get money. Again, bad motivation. Paul says, from such withdraw yourself. Don't have anything to do with people like that. Then he goes on. He says, now godliness with contentment is great gain. What's he talking about? Well, we often apply this to us generally, and I think it can be applied to us generally, but think about the context. Who's he talking to? Who's he talking about? He's talking to an evangelist. He's talking about false evangelists. He himself is an evangelist. And he says, godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. Having food and clothing, with these we shall be content. Timothy, you, me, faithful gospel preachers, if we've got what we need, that's what we need. That's all we need. And we're going to be content with that. Those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare, into many foolish and harmful lusts. Those who? Again, who's he talking about in the context? Well, we apply this generally, and it certainly does apply generally, but contextually, it's talking about preachers. Those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and snare and into many foolish and harmful lusts which drown men in destruction and perdition. The love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. But you, O man of God, flee these things. What things? Love of money. That's what. Let's go back to Philippians chapter 4. And notice there the Apostle Paul's example again. Philippians 4 and verse 10. Paul, still talking about the Philippians' support of him, his relationship with them. He says, I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at last your care for me has flourished again. All these years, 11 years later, your care for me has flourished again. It's amazing. He says, I rejoice. Though you surely did care, but you lacked opportunity. Not that I speak in regard to need, for I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. I always make the joke about this. You know, when we were first married, Sandy and I were living in Texas, and she really wasn't all that happy in Texas, just to be honest. And she'd been used to Alabama and Alabama football and all the great things we have in Alabama. And I told her, you know, I said, Paul said whatever state he was in, he learned to be content. And she said he'd never been to the state of Texas when he said that. But we've been content in whatever state we've been in. Paul was. And he certainly knew how to go without. And he certainly knew how to have way more than he needed at times. And he says that. I know how to be abased and I know how to abound. Everybody's worried about, you know, how much the preacher is making. That's fine if y'all want to be worried about that. You can be. Maybe you should be. I don't know. It's fine for everybody to be worried about that, except the preacher. He doesn't need to be worried about it. Paul says, I've learned in whatever state I am to be content. He's talking about the support that he receives or doesn't. That's what he's talking about. The support that he receives or doesn't. You've got to have that attitude to be a preacher of the gospel. And so, I know how to be abased. I know how to abound everywhere. And in all things, I've learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. We quote that and quote that and quote that. And we use it for a lot of different things. But very few of us probably have ever really considered the context. He's talking about the strength to be unconcerned about his poverty or his riches and entirely concerned about the gospel of Jesus Christ. Nevertheless, he says, you've done well that you shared in my distress. And you Philippians know that also in the beginning of the gospel, when I departed from Macedonia, no church shared with me concerning giving and receiving, but you only. Even in Thessalonica, you sent aid once and again to my necessities. Not that I seek for gift for the gift, but I seek for the fruit that abounds to your account. See, it's not really about, from your standpoint, how much the brethren in Zimbabwe are making or not making. From your standpoint, it's how much do you love them? How much do you love the gospel of Jesus Christ? What are you willing to give to support the gospel of Jesus Christ? That's what that's about. It's the fruit that abounds to your account. They had helped him and they'd done well. Paul says, I have all and abound. I am full, having received from Epaphroditus the things you sent to me, a sweet-smelling aroma, an acceptable sacrifice, well-pleasing to God. And my God shall supply all your need according to His riches in glory by Jesus Christ. Here's what I have noticed about the Eastside Church in the years that I've been here. More and more and more we have increased support of evangelists in the field. Every time we do, you know what happens? That number goes up. For the Lord blesses us. There is a principle there that I believe to be true. Men who supported to preach the gospel have to have these pure motives. They must be men of transparency and faithfulness. I want you to think about that collection for the saints that was made by a number of churches. It's talked about in a number of passages, Romans 15, 2 Corinthians 8, 1 Corinthians 16. But in 2 Corinthians chapter 8, as Paul's describing how that collection is going to be handled and several churches sending, and he says, we've sent the brother whose praise is in the gospel throughout all the churches. So they sent a brother along with the collection just to oversee it. Someone who all the churches knew about, everybody thought highly of. They sent him along with that. He says, and not only that, but who was also chosen by the churches to travel with this gift, which is administered by us to the glory of the Lord Himself and to show your ready mind. So they're sending somebody just to oversee the funds. You say, well, couldn't the Apostle Paul be trusted to do that? Sure he could. But maybe he felt like that shouldn't be his responsibility. Maybe he had too many other fish to fry. Maybe he didn't want folks to think that he was, you know, just in this for the money, which some might think. So the churches turned it over to somebody else. avoiding this, he says, here's the reason that he gives, that anyone should blame us in this lavish gift which is administered by us. So Paul is going to be responsible for seeing to the administration of the gift, for getting it down to Jerusalem and seeing that the poor saints get helped, but the actual carrying of the money is going to be done by this third person, this brother that has the praise of the churches, providing honorable things not only in the sight of the Lord, but in the sight of all men. And so here's what I would say. We need to be transparent. I need to be transparent. The brothers in Zimbabwe need to be transparent. You have money for something. How much money did you get for that? Where did it go exactly? What was it used for? Some sort of reporting of that needs to go on. That can be verified if need be. They need to be doing that. We need to be doing that. That's the principle that you see here. Transparent means allowing something to be clearly seen. Notice the words that the Apostle Paul uses, providing things honorable not only in the sight of the Lord, but in the sight of all men. That's the definition of transparency. Everybody's clear. Here's the money. Here's what it was used for. And you can see it. Never try to justify dishonesty. We need to understand this. American preachers do, and especially I think our brothers who support in foreign countries where there is a temptation to misuse funds that's probably greater than anything we have here, because there's so much deprivation, poverty, need. It's easy to say, well, I need money for this, and then, well, I'm going to transfer it to this, or I'm going to do something else with it because I think now that that's a bigger need. Or maybe I said this was the need, but really I'm just going to use it for myself because I'm in such bad shape. That is a temptation for some. In Acts chapter 5, and I'll be just a few more minutes, but I think these are important points for us to look at. And I need to practice presenting them to you because I'm going to talk to the guys in Zim about it Thursday night, Lord willing. You know the story in Acts chapter 5, right? Ananias and Sapphira. So they sold this piece of property, and apparently several in the church in Jerusalem were selling property and bringing the money, laying it at the apostles' feet, like Barnabas had done that. And Ananias and Sapphira, they sold this possession. They kept back part of the proceeds, his wife also being aware of it, and brought it at a certain part and laid it at the apostles' feet, acting as if, it doesn't say they said, but at least they acted as if, this is all that we got from the sale of our land. They might have said that as well, but that's what they let on. This is all the money we got from the sale of our land, here it is. But they kept back part of it secretly. So they weren't straightforward, they weren't transparent, they weren't honest about it. And we know what happened. Peter said to Ananias, "Why has Satan filled your heart to lie to the Holy Spirit?" This was a lie, to keep back part of the price of the land for yourself. It wasn't, Peter's not arguing, he's not saying you had to give it all. He's not saying you had to give any of it. What he's saying is you deceived. You deceived by pretending like you gave all of it. That was the problem. He goes on to explain, he says, "While it remained, was it not your own? You could have done anything with it you wanted to. You didn't have to give it. After it was sold, was it not under your control? You still could have kept all that money if you wanted to. Why have you conceived this thing in your heart that you have lied, you've not lied to men, but to God?" Ananias, hearing these words, fell down and breathed his last. The same thing happens to Sapphira not long after. What's the difference in Ananias and Sapphira reporting less than they receive from a source, and a gospel preacher reporting less than he receives from sources who support him? What's the difference? For personal support, gospel preachers need to report all that they receive from every source. For helping with benevolence or buying Bibles or helping with medical needs, gospel preachers in the field need to report all that they receive from every source, everyone who sent, and supply receipts, pictures, delivery of goods, whatever it is, as evidence that this was done properly. What is it if you claim that you need funds for one thing and you're really going to use them for something else? That's a lie. You see the seriousness of it in Acts chapter 5. To a lot of people, what Ananias and Sapphira did is not a big thing. They do it all the time. A lot of people in the world wouldn't think twice about that. But Christians are held to a higher standard, and gospel preachers especially are held to a higher standard. One should not expect and does not deserve to be supported to preach the gospel if he cannot handle money honestly. Jesus Christ said in Luke chapter 16 and verse 10 that he who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much. He who is unjust in what is least is unjust also in much. Therefore, if you've not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, that's material stuff, if you've not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to you the true riches? True riches are the gospel of Christ. And if you can't be trusted to handle a few dollars, how can we trust you with the gospel of Christ? Here's some suggestions I'm going to give the guys over there. I'm just going to run through them real quick. They need to communicate. I know there's a language barrier. You know, they think they speak English better than they do. I don't speak Shauna at all. So really need to work to communicate. Even if they speak good English, they probably need to have somebody proofread their requests and their support so we can understand what's being asked for. Check your English. Just check it. When you're requesting help, what's the need? Why is it needed? What efforts have been made to meet the need already? Who else has been contacted about the need? Who else are you requesting funds from? How much is needed? These are things that, you know, when they request things from us, we need to know this stuff. Sometimes we'll get a support request for something and the brother will just say, well, you know, so-and-so is hungry. Great. You know, what can I do about that? Tell me what's going on. Why are they hungry? Can the brethren there give them food? Do we need, how much? Lots of questions. Just tell us what the deal is. Do your work and report it. Do your work in the gospel and tell us what you're doing. You don't have to give every minute of every day what you're doing, but tell us what you're doing. Report your support transparently. How much you getting from whom? For what? That's pretty simple. The elders here have recently sent out this sort of a template for guys that we support to use. And I think it's a great idea. You know, you're getting so much from Eastside, you're getting so much from another church, another individual. Here's how much you get for your monthly support. And then maybe you had a need of food relief in your area or whatever it is. And so this much was sent to you last month. Report that. And just report it every month. You send out a support letter every month anyway to report about your work. And this is pretty simple. Now I want to tell you what, brothers and sisters in Christ, we are extraordinarily blessed at Eastside, I believe. We are supporting men in the gospel of Christ, and I've been privileged to meet all but one of them. But we are supporting men to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ who are among some of the hardest working, most dedicated men I know in this world. Do they sometimes make mistakes? Yes. Could they learn how to do things a little bit smoother from our standpoint? Sometimes, some of them. But they are overall extraordinary men. And we are blessed to have the fellowship with them. I'm going to spend a few days with Reason Marara. He's my wheels when I get over there. He's going to drive me around. We support Reason for the work that he does at Shevanawa and Kamarami. And I'm going to get to visit, Lord willing, both of those churches next Friday and Saturday. 5 baptisms today at Shavanawa. This river is about 200 yards from where they meet. I've been there before, and it's where they baptize everybody who obeys the gospel there. But what a joy. This is the kind of thing that we see with regularity from these men. They're not just over there collecting funds and not doing it. They are working to spread the gospel and build up these churches, and you are having a part of that. And let's be thankful. And even tonight, let's be thankful for all God is doing with us and for us and through us. Tonight, there might be one here who's subject to the invitation of Christ. I've not talked about what to do to be a Christian, but if you're ready to do that tonight, we'll help you. And if you have wandered away and need to make that right, we'll help you. We'd ask you to come while we stand and while we sing.